Please be seated. I invite Amy Bean, if she would, to come and share our scripture.
Good morning. Today's scripture is from Hebrews 12, 1 through 2. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith, who, for the sake of the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Thank you.
So today we're celebrating 60 years of marriage for Frank and Jan Butler. Although 60th anniversaries are becoming a little more common, I think, with people living longer, it is still a huge accomplishment. We're here to congratulate you, to party with you. More years together than you probably ever imagined when you said, "I do." Is that true? I would imagine. Of course, there are things about making it to 60 that are not in our control. It's certainly a gift to have the health to still both be here. But beyond that, a lot of things about making a marriage last 60 years are work, the work of a lifetime. Thousands of choices, day after day, to be faithful, to be loving, to be understanding, to say I'm sorry and forgive each other and begin again. Writer Madeline L'Engle, in writing about her own marriage of many years, called it a two-part invention. And she described it kind of like a contraption. And she said it's held together by Band-Aids and string and tape and wires. Her way of saying, I think, that a long-term relationship is formed and reformed countless times, sometimes battered, but somehow put together again and again, with love and laughter and lots of grace and mercy. So when I saw these verses in Hebrew as one of the choices for today's readings, it seemed to fit, because I think these verses are talking about another long-term relationship, the work of a lifetime of living in faith. Chapter 11, right before this in Hebrews, has described a long litany of people of faith, foremothers and forefathers who have gone before with courage and strength, role models who held on to their faith and hope. They continued in their trust in God in spite of trying and difficult circumstances, in spite of persecution and even death. Just like a long-lasting marriage, the writer describes the life of faith as a relationship that takes perseverance and patience. It's a long-distance race, a marathon, not a sprint. The image is of runners in a long race, and the runners have to be determined, persistent, throwing aside anything that weighs them down or holds them back. And they're surrounded by a large crowd, the great cloud of witnesses, cheering from the stands as they pound over the racetrack. When I read these verses, I picture the times I stood in a crowd watching the Peachtree Road Race in Atlanta. This is a huge 10K run that thousands and thousands of people participate in. And many years I stood in the crowd along the side, cheering the sweating, slogging runners as they, you know, jogged past, in CJ's words. You know, only the elite at the very beginning are running. Most of the crowd is jogging. It's hot. It's usually in early June or July. I mean, it's sweat city in Atlanta, even at 7 a.m. And I remember watching those runners toss aside paper water cups and bottles and sometimes even clothing that they wished they had not worn, just to keep on keeping on running the race. Now, some of us here are runners or have been at some point in our life. Some of us maybe not. But I think we've all done some physical activity that took endurance and persistence. I know some of Laura Ward and maybe some others recently swam across Cuga Lake for hospice care. I know some of you are training to do the AIDS bike ride, so you've been doing a lot of long bike rides. All of us, I think, have done something at some point. It might not have been hard for anybody else, but it was hard for us. Sometimes just walking a certain distance can take persistence and determination. And we all know that when we're doing that kind of thing, the challenge isn't just physical. In fact, maybe more of it is mental, emotional, spiritual. You have to dig down to find those inner strengths, those inner resources to keep you going. This week, I heard about long-distance trail runner Tyler Andrews. Did anybody else hear or read this story? He set a new record for the fastest known time for a trail known as the Salkantay Trail in the mountains of Peru. This trail is 40 miles in the Andes Mountains. He said he started out, it was 20 degrees. Within a couple hours, he was in the 80s or even 90s because the elevation goes up and down. Normal hikers do this trail in 4 days with 3 nights of overnight camping. Tyler ran it in 6 hours and 13 minutes. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? He talked about, oh, and by the way, no support team. He carried everything liquid and nutritionally that he needed on his back. Tyler talked about what it takes him to do this kind of trail running. For one thing, he says he breaks it down into sections. He says, I know that trail well, and so I have my mental markers along the way. In social work class years ago, they talked about partializing the problem. He breaks it down. So when he gets to that marker, he can celebrate a little bit. He knows he can check that off. And he doesn't think about the whole long thing at once. He also says whenever he's attempting something like this, he looks for and finds a mantra, something that will help him. And so written in Sharpie on his arm were the words, savor every moment. So there's the goal out there, but there's living in the moment here. He said, it's a beautiful trail. I didn't want to miss it. I didn't want to be so focused just on getting there that I missed the experience. Savor every moment. Learning to live that way, to be mindful and conscious all along the way, is a huge part of really learning to live. Now, when I was trying to think of a title for this message or sermon, I played around with several things. Again, Shella could tell you, this is one of those things that sometimes gets me stuck during the week. I thought about a marathon, not a sprint. I thought about running the race. None of that seemed too exciting. And then this phrase popped in my mind, go the distance. I asked Bill, my husband, a couple nights ago, I said, go the distance. What does that bring up for you? And he goes, it's something. It's something. Anybody know? Field of Dreams. Do you remember the movie? Some of you? Anybody remember Field of Dreams? Good. It's a phrase from that movie. It's a great movie, by the way, and you can still watch it. It's a story about a Midwest farm family struggling with their life when the husband, Ray, hears a voice telling him, if you build it, they will come. And somehow he figures out that it is a baseball field, a major league baseball field. So he plows down corn that they need to sell to make their farm stay in the black. He plows down a whole section of cornfield and builds a major league baseball field, complete with lights and bases and everything, with all of their savings, on the hope that somehow something about that message is really, really important. Eventually, again, through lots of struggles, he has another message, ease his pain. And he's like, whose pain? And it's a long, complicated story. It's worth watching. But he ends up going all the way to Boston to connect with a writer and go to a Red Sox game and then ending up back in Minnesota. So it's this whole crazy story. But at one point, the third message is go the distance. Keep on keeping on. Stay with your quest, even though it seems nuts. What happens on that baseball field is the spirits of former baseball players show up to play. Most notably, the 1990 Chicago White Sox, who got labeled as the Black Sox because they were banned for baseball for being accused of throwing the World Series, of cheating. And they were never, ever allowed to play, even in the minor leagues, the rest of their lives. And they show up because they want to play. And as Ray continues to go the distance, finally who shows up to play is his own father, long dead, from whom he had been estranged before he died, who was once himself a minor league player with great hopes in baseball. It's a story about dreams and regrets. A story about the possibility of reconciliation, maybe even beyond the grave. It's a story of emotional and spiritual realities beyond just the material and the physical. It's a story about the power of love and reconciliation. Go the distance. And I thought about these verses. Since you're surrounded by such a great crowd of witnesses, Ray Kinsella's crowd of witnesses were baseball players. Those were the people he needed to show up for him at that point in his life. The book of Hebrews encourages us to realize that we are part of so much more than just what we can know with our five senses. We are part of this material plane, not just this material and physical plane, but spiritual realities. We are part of a web of relationships that transcends space and even time. But there are ways that they are here with us, in ways we can't explain and yet can at times somehow sense. Andrea Mooney a few weeks ago talked about growing up Catholic and having such a powerful sense of the saints as cousins, a spiritual family available to help and support her. Those of us who grew up Protestant may not quite have that sense of those saintly cousins. And yet, we all have our saints. We all have our cloud of witnesses. Who are they for you? Who are the people whose lives shaped your life? Who are the people whose words of wisdom still rise up in you when you need them the most? Who is your cloud of witnesses? People whose lives formed and shaped you. Maybe, and I say this to myself, maybe it's our own perception that needs to shift so we can know more clearly that they are still here for us. We are not alone. We are part of this great community of faith that stretches across time and space, the communion of saints, the glorious company of the saints of light. Sometimes, many times actually, in this very tangible physical life we live, faith can be really hard. One of my personal saints used to say that in the midst of suffering and pain, in the times when we don't understand the brokenness of our lives, we need a community to do our believing for us. In the hard times, we need community, a cloud of witnesses, both living and dead, to surround us and sustain us, to hold on to faith for us when we can't do it for ourselves. Did you hear or read the story of the man in El Paso who lost his wife in the mass shooting? Obviously, there were many, but Antonio Basco lost his wife, Margie, and he had basically no family, two other family members. So he told the funeral home, put out a public invitation. Maybe some other people will come. He wanted someone to stand with him, someone to be a witness to the value of her life. The numbers I've read in the reports vary, but the lowest estimate I saw was that yesterday over 700 people showed up. They stood in line for a couple of hours just to get in. And those who couldn't fit inside stayed outside in the over 100 degree heat, the length of the service. People didn't just come from Texas. They came from Arizona and New Mexico and as far away as San Francisco. And there were 900 flower arrangements from places as far away as Asia. People knew they needed to be there. They knew Antonio Basco needed a community, a cloud of witnesses to show up for him. And they did. We people can do that for each other. We can be here for one another. We do it here in this community. We do it with friends and family. We show up for each other. We offer each other love in the hard times, and we help each other hold on to faith. And what is the faith we're holding on to? The writer of Hebrews says faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. We can get tripped up in our Western Christian associations and think that faith is about believing the right things, thinking the right ways. But that's not what Jesus taught. Jesus didn't say believe this and believe that. Jesus said love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and spirit, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's it. It's huge, but that's it. Faith is relationship. Our relationship of love with God and with each other. Faith is knowing that we're all part of one great web of relationships and living into that. That's what Jesus shows us. That's what he opens up for us. He's the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith, Hebrews says. The one who goes before us, blazing the trail, showing us the way. Jesus, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. The goal is joy. The joy that was set before Jesus, the joy that is set before us. And what is the joy about? I think it's the joy of complete and perfect communion, perfect unity with God and with each other. With all of creation, that's the goal. The mystics call it bliss, total and perfect love, joy-filled oneness. For that joy, for that, we keep running the race. We go the distance. Jesus shows us the way, the path of love, the path of self-giving, the path of letting go of all the things that bind us and hold us back and constrict us and keep us tied up in knots. The path of dying to our small egoic self and being born again and again into more expansive, joy-filled living. That is the faith we hold on to, the faith we give our lives to. That faith leads us forward into joy.